Well, with regard to the president, I track all these major politicians and what they say. And of course, my job as a forensic expert is to, you know, my advocacy is for facts and evidence, not necessarily people at all, but facts and evidence. And when we take a look at our president and our attorney general, every time, literally every single time that they have made a comment involving law enforcement contact with the public, going all the way back to Professor Gates and Sergeant Crowley and all these things, they have been 100% wrong on what the real forensic facts were of those cases. In every single case, the police officers were acting appropriately, but they turn around and they spin it to make it look, and they, of course, they talk to their base, they get people riled up, but if you really study these cases, if you take them all apart, you see that the police officers were acting appropriately. Now, that's not to say that police officers, upon occasion, don't act inappropriately. I represent all sides, and I've probably done well over 200 officer-involved shootings and in-custody deaths. And during those occasions, have I found times where police acted inappropriately? Yeah, a couple. But the vast majority of the law enforcement contacts with the public are appropriate. Now, officers can also make mistakes, but the courts have said that if they are legitimate mistakes and the officers are acting in good faith, then the officers have a legal right to be wrong upon occasion. But of course, that entire narrative is spun around and turned to make officers look racist.
And the facts of the matter as well, are they not, Doctor, is that while these high-profile cases that end tragically, regardless of the circumstances, make such headlines in this country, the overwhelming majority, almost every time there is an interaction or any kind of a confrontation between a law enforcement officer and a suspect, almost every time they end without incident.
That is true. I think the public just has to lay aside these false narratives and look at the real facts here. We have over 900,000 peace officers in the United States. Okay, almost a million. And we make, on a monthly basis, millions of contacts with the public. During the year, there are tens of millions of contacts with the public. Of all those contacts, only about 1-2% become a use of force, result in a use of force by law enforcement. And there are all sorts of different uses of force, everything by putting handcuffs on people to officer-involved shootings. But it's only 1-2% of all the millions of those. And out of those, an extremely small number, I think it was 0.37%, result in an officer-involved shooting. Now, if you listen to the Black Lives Matter or the mainstream media, you think we're out there and we're killing people every day from the FBI. And these statistics are very easy to find. You can all Google it just by putting in law enforcement officers killed and assaulted statistics. And the FBI comes out every single year with these group of statistics. And, of course, they're usually about 6 months behind because we still try to gather these statistics. So the 2014 statistics are what we can discuss today. And what we found, and I actually predicted this many, many months ago, that there would be a marked increase in officers being murdered feloniously by suspects. And this year, between 2013 and 2014, we see just an amazing 53% increase in officers being murdered over 2013.
You predicted that. You thought you saw it coming, and it has come to pass. Why? Why did you see this coming? What are the main factors in your opinion?
Well, you know, I just wrote an article on our law enforcement and forensic website, drronmartinelli.com, and I would encourage your listeners, if they're interested in these types of statistics and violent crime and the real stories out there instead of the false narratives, to go on the drronmartinelli.com site and read all these articles. To answer your question specifically, when this Black Lives Matter movement popped up a couple of years ago, and actually it started from another false narrative, which was the Trayvon Martin self-defense shooting by George Zimmerman, and then really gathered steam after the Michael Brown shooting by Officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson, Missouri. This group has just been out there in everybody's faces spewing these false narratives that police are racist and they're killing black men at an inordinate level, what they refer to as extrajudicious killings. But what we see is we've had a lot of our irresponsible politicians, from the president on down, the former United States Attorney General Eric Holder, then you get your usual, you know, Al Sharptons and people like that spreading these lies. And as a result, people pick up this banner, and some of the sick ones out there, they come out, and first of all, what we've seen across the board is tremendous increases in people resisting arrest, resisting detentions, and then shooting and killing and ambushing officers. And I might tell you that the 2014 statistics show another marked increase, quite an incredible one. We've had a 62% increase of our officers being ambushed. And you know, we wrote another article a couple of weeks ago when the media was talking about school shootings. And they're saying, oh my God, there's so many of these school shootings, and all these people are getting killed. Well, the fact of the matter is, and I'll draw this back to what your comment is that between 1990 and 2015, there were 144 school shootings over 15 years, resulting in 160 homicides and 261 people being wounded. If you take just the city of Baltimore, Maryland, which has got huge problems if you've been following what's going on there. Just in the last 10 months of this year alone, people in the inner city have committed so many homicides that it equates to 130% more, just in 10 months, 130% more homicides than all the school shootings in the past 15 years throughout the United States.
And you have written about a plan, a six-point plan to stop some of this inner-city crime. Tell us about some of those highlights.
The federal government and some of the more liberal states, they really try to forward this whole gun control thing. And the first thing that your listeners need to understand, and I'm sure they've heard it before because it is a forensic fact, that the states that have the most restrictive gun control laws have the highest levels of violent crime, of which the majority are involving guns. So the thing to remember here, and that's step one in my plan, is to understand that it's not gun control, it's behavior control. People carry guns illegally, and they use guns illegally and commit crimes because there's a mentality, and they believe that they can do it and not be punished. And so the second part of my plan is that you've got to have mandated sentences for the illegal possession of firearms. And when you do this, there cannot be any plea bargaining, and there cannot be any reductions in sentence, because most people, when they see that a person gets sentenced to 20 years, that's really not what they get sentenced to. They get sentenced, really, they're only going to serve at the maximum of a 20-year sentence, 10 years, and they get one day off for every week of what they call good behavior, which amounts to just sitting in your cell and breathing. That's good behavior. So that's got to stop when it comes to gun crime. You have to change the mentality of the person and focus on the behavioral issues. So you've got to restructure the entire law system with respect to gun crimes for the illegal possession and use of guns. Then you've got to restructure this whole sentencing system. So that throughout the United States, we have perhaps one of the worst mental health systems around. And we've seen this in states like California, for instance. Just to tell you how it ties in with guns, we have over 100,000 people that have been adjudicated as being mentally incompetent and can't have guns. But people will go out and they'll try to purchase a gun. They'll fill out the gun form, the ATF form. There has not been, in the research I've done in California, there has not been one single person of those 100,000 people that were ever checked out by the California Department of Justice to find out should they have a gun or not. It's just absolutely incredible. We have some people out there that need help, and we are not helping these people whatsoever. And what happens to these people is they become, as I've written, they become ticking time bombs. And so when you see these people do these school shootings, the vast majority of these people are mentally dysfunctional people.
So in many cases, those people have been able to get and purchase legally those firearms because some of the mental health issues that they've had are basically off the record, so to speak, in the name of privacy. That information is not on the table.
That's exactly right. They fill out the forms, but the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Division of the United States Department of Justice, they don't have the manpower and they don't have the technology to check up on these forms. And so a great example was that young man that was involved in the church murders in that active shooter mass homicide in Charleston, South Carolina. And that person had filled out the form and everything. He shouldn't have had a gun, and nobody ever checked him out. I mean, that's exactly what they're talking about. Federal and state governments, they want to make all these laws, but then they never fund them. And so that's a real problem that we're experiencing here. Good people, good citizens have a right to have guns. People that have criminal histories, felony histories, crimes of assault, people that are mentally incompetent, illegal aliens, all these people have no rights to have firearms. And the good people need to be protected by the bad people.
If you change the mental health system, though, with so many, over 300, 350 million, whatever the number is, of guns already in this nation, are those laws, even though needed, going to be enough to keep firearms out of the hands of some of these other people, or can they just buy them illegally without a problem?
Well, sure. Listen, none of these, first of all, we have too many laws. You know, I'm a retired police detective. I've worked violent crimes my entire life. We have too many laws on the books. What we don't have are the wherewithal and the heroic courage it takes and the money to back it up to enforce the laws we have on the books already. We don't need to make a bunch of laws. What we need to do is enforce the laws we have with the manpower, the money, and the technology.